As Smash Mouth said, "Hey now, you're an all-star." And this is the Fat Man Chronicles.
I was not hiding. I was unsure. And I was really
welcome to episode 29 of the Fat Man Chronicles. My name is Pete. I'm sitting alongside my beautiful wife, Gretchen. And we are just a regular couple on the journey with you to health, fitness, weight loss, and hopefully a better life.
That's the goal.
That's the goal. And we have no wine.
No wine.
But we do have a guest.
We do. So that'll make up for the no wine.
We didn't want to offend anybody tonight by having copious amounts of wine with a guest on.
No.
Drunk interviewing?
Nah.
Tougher than it looks.
It really is. Not for everyone.
Yeah. So on the line with us, I'm just going to go ahead and introduce him, and he can jump in at any time then as part of the panel. The panel.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that the best? All right. Well, on the line, we have Peter Belarchek, who is the owner of the fatadaptedathlete.com and alldietsfail.com, which is one of the best URLs
That's
in the world.
That's an awesome URL.
It is unbelievable. He's got that, right? which is a coaching service, that second thing there. He's been low carb for 3 years, taking himself from a 265-pound musician beer drinker.
Nice.
To 199-pound marathon runner. So I'm interested in all of that.
That's crazy.
Except maybe the beer. I'm not really a beer guy. No. But
substitute wine for beer.
Right. And he's evolved his own version here, a modified version of a ketogenic lifestyle. And we're going to get into talking about keto because I kind of bashed it last episode.
Yeah. Did we get any hate mail?
We didn't.
Oh, thank goodness.
Well, I mean, no more than normal.
Oh, okay, good. Okay.
That's geared towards a nutrient balance that's more science-driven and more of an overall lifestyle balance. So he goes much more to the science side,
okay,
which is what kind of drew me.
So that's why why you geek out whenever you talk about him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Flight stalker-ish, you know, maybe a little bit.
Well, maybe. But anyway, Peter, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. What a great introduction. I should have had some wine here. I should have been the drunk guest. That would have been a lot more.
Drunk guests are great guests.
Yes.
As we started talking through the Fat Adapted Athlete and then just kind of evolving out, you know, my goal was to be able to, you know, not have if it works for me or if it feels right for me or, you know, if it fits into my macros. It was to try to figure out. I was making a lot of mistakes. I was just luckily drinking a lot of bulletproof coffee and losing weight because I was running so much. And it stopped happening. Then all of a sudden I hit a plateau where I was mushy skinny. And then I had to figure out, okay, so how did the science actually pull together for this? How did I actually move the weight? It wasn't just magically I drank a bunch of fat and then like the little calorie devils came in and stole all my fat away. It didn't happen that way. There was something, the science behind it. And then I realized that, you know, eating all the fat or drinking all the fat was probably hindering my performance. It was making life easy, but it was definitely hindering my ability to burn body fat. Mm-hmm. So then I dove deeper down the rabbit hole, surrounded myself with a lot of smart people. Which is, you know, kind of what you do. You want to learn something, you find the best minds that are out there teaching this. But they don't always have the ability to speak in a common language that everybody gets to understand. And, you know, you'll see in the group the arguments that go on because somebody used the wrong ism at the end of it. And then they have like 20 strings of conversation coming out about it. I figured out like, okay, so how do I break this down and get it so that everybody can absorb it?
Yeah, it's great. And how I came across you is, you know, when I started down this path, or we started down this path, and I was trying to explore the athletic side, because as we know, Gretchen's couch performance is hindered slightly by our dietary habits, but not as much as I was afraid my budding athletic performance would be. This whole middle-aged onset athlete thing.
Yeah. It's like your own midlife crisis. I never thought about it like that.
It is a midlife crisis.
It's a little midlife crisis.
Totally.
Oh, so it all makes sense now.
So I came across the Fat Adapted Athlete Beginner, which is actually how I met Julie, Superfan Julie.
Oh, nice.
Was in Peter's group. Do you prefer Pete or Peter?
Either. Either's fine. Yeah.
PB. I mean, we could just start making up names.
You go with
P. Diddy.
P. Diddy. So yeah, that's how I, you know, and there was a lot of conversation around athletic performance as well as dietary habits, which I liked, and it would dive into the science. And I do have to say, you know, if you're looking to understand a little bit different than what we do, and I'm not saying that we won't adapt at some point, which is one of the reasons I'm really, you know, glad to have Peter on. But he's got so much information just pinned to the top post of the Fat Adapted Athlete Beginner and the Fat Adapted Athlete that it's unbelievable. I mean, it really dives pretty deep into stuff.
And that was the clearinghouse. That was what I wanted to do. Originally, this started out as a group. I started it probably 6 years ago, and it was called Friends of Pete Workout Club, and kind of a goof on the, like, we want to complain, we hate what we're doing, we, you know, the diet is awful, you know, the workouts, I feel all the pain and I don't want to be here. And then I went through, I'm juicing with kale and, you know, agave syrup and trying to do all those, like, get the natural into me. And then I went on, you know, where I was eating egg white and whole wheat bagels from the local Wawa convenience store to us. And then, you know, finally evolving out to, you know, what it has. And, you know, but ultimately, that was a place for me to keep my progress. And then any good facts that I found, any good science that, you know, or what I thought at that time was science, I would put there. Until then, it started to evolve and clean up. And, you know, I'd probably say our biggest turn was about 1 year ago, where, you know, everything that I followed in the past sounded pretty good, but it was wrong. And I knew that it was wrong based on the way that I was feeling and the damage I was doing myself. Like, running 60 miles a week and doing it on 20 or 30 grams of carbs is unhealthy. Your body's ability to replenish that glycogen fast just isn't there. Now, you could do it from protein, but if you're keeping protein super low and then now stealing whatever protein you have to build muscles over to building energy in this highly cortisol-producing process, it's just keeping your body under constant stress. So when I did that, I actually dropped my testosterone down to where I was crying at movies. I would have been perfect for, like, the couch sessions. I would have been watching.
You would have fit right in. You had to turn in your man card for a little bit.
But it gave me a hit. Until then, I had to realize what was going on. And then, you know, some of the scientist guys came in. They said, listen, you got to figure out carbohydrates in the minimum dosage needed to get the job done. And, you know, when carbs go up, fat has to drop down a little bit. They're both energy macros. So you can't overeat both of them just because one's for performance and one's for satiety or for healthy hormones. You have to balance those out. So through that, figuring out not only how to balance it out, but to figure out, you know, there's timing. It's not really eating your carbs before, because that will throw the sugar engine on. It's eating them 40 minutes into the run, depending on length. It's, you know, getting them the day before to kind of, you know, build up your glycogen tank a little bit, because we're at a very low glycogen tank when we're at a normal everyday level. But yeah, it was just putting every last little bit of science that I could over there. And then I had the guys that came in and they told me, you know what, you're worried about protein. You know, protein doesn't automatically turn to sugar. You know, it takes an emergency process of the body to say, okay, you need some glycogen and we're not making it. So we got to pull it from someplace. So let's, like, strip the backbone off of a fat cell, which is the glycerol backbone. And let's grab some lactate and some amino acids and we'll start making sugar. It's pulled in to the liver on this emergency process. And it's not pushed in because you eat too much of it. So once I started to embrace that and I said, okay, well, I got into doing this from listening to a podcast, or not a podcast, a radio show where Vinny Tortorich was on the show. And he said some things that kind of pulled everything I knew together. And then I went down the rabbit hole because he said, you know what, try something out for 2 or 3 weeks and then see if you like it. And then try for another 2 or 3 weeks and see what happens. And you're not going to kill yourself in 6 weeks. So in the same way, I decided, let me up my protein to a reasonable level. Let me drop the fat down so it's still high fat, like 50% of my calories or more still come from fat. And let me just moderate the carbohydrates and see what happened. And when I did that, I started to get leaner. I started to lose more weight. I was a little bit hungrier at first, but then that kind of subsided. And then I learned how to manipulate the fat up and down to handle the hunger and manipulate the protein up a little bit to moderate the hunger and pull the carbohydrates down. When you pull them down into the low 20s, like your hunger just disappears. So it was a couple little things that put the fix on.
Were you running during this process?
So what I did is once I took the big testosterone hit, after going to the doctor, getting some tests, they wanted to put me on replacement therapy. I said, listen, just give me a few months. Let me figure this out. So I went, and there's a, pardon me, the name, I want to say Krista Vlad. He has a book called The Testosterone Protocol. And I read that, you know, and it pulled a lot of foods that I should be eating, a lot of minerals, like, you know, guys, really, not only do we need to make sure that our electrolytes are right, everybody, but it's making sure that your zinc is right. That's one of the most forgotten minerals. So by doing that, stopping running 100%, putting it on the back burner, I paid up front for like $1,500 worth of marathons. I had my whole next year paid for. I was supposed to have run the New York City Marathon, which that was like, I won the lottery for that. So that was like 300 and some odd dollars down the tubes. But I decided that my health was more important. So I had to shelf that. And what I found out is, one, when I stopped all the running and all the training, I stopped getting as hungry. I was also running at a higher level than what I should have been, that was incorporating a lot of glycogen. And if you're using a lot of glycogen, you're going to have to make it, or you're going to get hungry, you know, to eat it. So I figured that out. And then, you know, you just have to lift heavy things, you know, go to the gym, do a lot of squats. It's the big, big muscle group. So through that, it took me almost a year to recover. You know, so by listening to, you know, I say this, and, you know, I try to be totally politically correct, but listening to all the popular podcasts of the day, not this popular one, but the other popular
one. Oh, bless your heart.
The dozens of listeners applaud that.
But, you know, from listening to a lot of them, and, you know, by going astray, I did a lot of damage to myself. And that's why I created this group, because I wanted to make sure that everybody knew that you cannot just drop your protein down to, you know, malnourished levels. Even though it's a protein-sparing diet, you know, a way of eating, you can't do that and not have something, you know, happen on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, even though carbohydrates aren't essential, it doesn't mean that if your body has to make them, it's not going to put it through a lot of stress to do that. And that's what we miss.
Yeah. I mean, it's been interesting because, well, in the last episode, Gretchen talked about a plateau that she's been on and a little bit of a gain and some changes she wanted to make, potentially. And for me, you know, the running has become more and more. I just hit my first 100-mile month ever. And,
nice.
You know, I feel like I'm doing it correctly in terms of intensity, just because I've got a plan and a coach that kind of helped and tells me, Andy at Silver Fox is always telling me to slow down. So
he yelled at you this past weekend again.
He did. But, you know, I had to race. So, I mean, this last weekend, I had a sub 30 meetup, which just doesn't happen in the Chicagoland area too often. So I was super excited to meet Sarah, who I talk to a lot about podcasts and nutrition quite often. And there was also Monica, who was in town. Pam came in town to run it. Chris lives here, but I got to, you know, meet him, and I got to wave at Eva as she ran by with her 6-year-old running his first 5K, which was so cute.
That's cute.
It was in ideal conditions, and I had run 12 miles the day before on Friday because the conditions just weren't going to be great on Saturday. I had at first planned to do like 9 and then finish with the race, but it just terrible conditions. It was raining. But I went out and I ran my PR 30 minutes, 18 seconds, and that was a 4:20 PR for me,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, now that's a lot of, like you're saying, Peter, that's a lot of glycogen gone between a 12-mile run and a fairly intense 5K the next day. And I was feeling it, and for sure. But the incredible part about eating less, and I want to unpack some of the stuff you've been talking about, but the incredible part about eating less grains and refined sugar and sugar in general, is inflammation is so low that I recover very fast. Like I had a tempo run today and I was perfectly fine. My legs just seem to recover very quickly.
Yeah. And that's probably the main reason why people search. Well, they don't want to bonk and they want quick recovery. You know, I got one of the guys in the group, he does these 100-mile ultras that are like up mountains. Just crazy
psycho people
stuff. And after that, he was like, yeah, you know, it took me about a week to recover, which most of those guys take almost a month to recover after something like that. And he was out doing a 20-miler like a week later. And it's because, you know, he embraces the carbs when he's on the run. You basically train low and you run high. You know, when you're in the run, you know, a lot of people are afraid to take in sugars or carbohydrates because we're fat adapted and we don't want to do that. But in the right timing, you know, your body can move both sugars into the cell and fat where it needs to go, fatty acids where it needs to go to fuel you, without insulin. You know, actually like an hour and a half, like there's not to go too off the deep end. Like the GLUT4 receptors are able to move sugar into the cell without insulin, which is unheard of. Insulin is what does that. You know, and if insulin's out, you can't release fat. But just magically, that's what happens. So everybody's afraid of sugaring up during a run, and you got to be metabolically flexible. You got to be able to train on fat, do whatever you're doing on fat, and then turn on the sugar engine when you need to. And that's kind of what you did. But now, afterwards, you got to replenish that. You know, if you just burnt out like 1,000 calories of glycogen, if you're going to force your body to make that from protein, that protein's a very expensive material. It's like, you know, hey, I got this fuel. I got twigs over here and I got logs over here, but let me go cut the couch up and throw that on the fire because it's expensive. It doesn't make a lot of sense. So we want to use the right fuel for the right purpose. So trying to use protein to do that, which we do in the ketogenic world, is not optimal. Again, very stressful process. We want to use some quality carbohydrates. That's when you'd have some yogurt or some berries or some nuts or, you know, some kombucha, something that's at least healthy for the gut. To replenish your glycogen reserves, so that your body doesn't have to work so hard to do it.
And that's what you've noticed, like after the last few long runs and stuff, like you've craved like that extra like carbs that we don't normally have, and it's helped you. I mean, that's exactly what you do now. I mean, you take a little, like in your longer run, you have those waffle thingies.
Yep.
And I mean, that's, but it took you a while to get to that, like.
Well, I mean, part of it's mental, right? Which is what he's getting at.
Exactly.
I mean, well, first of all, the GLUT4 receptors, I thought what you used when you were sitting on the couch. So now I know that's not, that's different. That's a different GLUT receptor. But I've even started, like, I don't mention this in any of these groups anymore because I'm tired of getting yelled at. But I have a bagel on race morning.
Yeah.
I mean, whether or not that helps me physically, it helps me mentally. And there's a big mental piece to this thing. When you're out there running like that.
And mentally, that's, you know, I mean, that's half of the battle. But understanding when you do that, like there's two things that you can do to really wreck that first 15 minutes. One is not warm up. Like, you know, most people before they go for a run, like to do a 5K, you should almost be warming up for a full 5K. You know, ahead of time, you know, to run a half marathon, you should be running at least a mile, mile and a half slowly to get that heart rate up. But then it's also avoiding any sugars introduced up until like maybe, well, on a short race like that, you can start fueling on sugar right from the beginning, but you're already carrying enough. You already have your glycogen on board. So if you put it in your stomach, your body just has to do an extra process to pull it out of there. You know, it's training your body to pull it from glycogen. You got, you know, if you're in the 200-pound range, you know, and you were a carb eater, you would carry about 2,000 calories of glycogen. If you're fat adapted, usually you're glycogen deficient, you're usually carrying about 1,000. So that's more than enough to run that race at top blow up speed.
Oh yeah, for this race, I didn't use it as fuel, and I mean, I'm eating that bagel probably 3 hours before the race, give or take. And it's more almost like a ritual. It's what, you know, and it doesn't bother my stomach and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I was practicing, right? I mean, this race
you're trying to figure out what worked for your body.
I can run 12 miles on nothing. I don't need any fuel in that time. But I've started to experiment mostly with, I think the honey stinger waffles have kind of been the best for me personally, like just in terms of what I can stomach.
It doesn't upset,
and
it does, yeah. Doesn't upset
all the gels and stuff. I don't know. I don't know what's in that garbage. So
yeah. And you know, I learned, you know, really, and again, it comes from, you know, guys like Vinny Tortorich. He says, like, whenever he was getting ready to hit a hill, he would just take a Lifesaver candy. That's really all that you need, is that extra little kick so that you can work your fifth gear. In the same way, I learned, like, as I started, I'll leave the brands out because I don't want to trash anybody, but there were like two or three products that everybody swore up and down to take. And I realized, once I started looking at the ingredients, I figured out what was pseudoscience that blew up in the 80s that was just garbage, to what was just plain old sugar. And I decided, let me just take a teaspoon of honey and put it in my water. And when I run, I have that orange mud backpack with like the quiver where you can have two bottles on your back. And I'd have one that had a teaspoon of honey, one that just had some salt and some potassium in it. And that was my fuel for the half marathon. That little honey trickle does some crazy wonders. That's something that you might want to try on your next lengthy run.
Can we say honey trickle on a podcast?
We're PG. We're PG here. I'm just saying. I mean, we didn't say that going into it, but we're PG.
That's why we haven't invited Vinny Tortorich on.
I'm from New Jersey, and I was so afraid. I'm like, you know, it's just, at what point am I going to curse?
I have a mouth of a truck driver, dude. So,
but your daughter listens, so that's why you keep it clean.
We try, right?
We do.
Overall, but you know, I want to rewind a little bit here because you said a lot of things at the beginning that I'm not sure everybody, you know, will fully understand. So we kind of touched on macros in our last episode, you know, the three macros that there are. And when we first started doing this lower carb way of eating, we, you know, talked a lot about fat. And I think that was because we just didn't want to view fat as the enemy. We actually eat a lot of protein.
We do.
But we don't track our macros. And I know in your program, you know, you talk about that. But we just don't. Like, it's such a reminds me so much of all the times I failed, because those all involve tracking.
Yeah, it's kind of, it reminds me more of like Weight Watchers, a diet. Like, we don't view this as a diet, you know, that we talked about that the last time.
Yeah, I break up with my fitness pal like every other week.
Yeah.
I have to dump her and delete her off my phone. So I get it. But there's, you can go both ways, you know. I tell people, if you're keeping score of the game, you have to track your macros. If you have a very specific goal, you need everything so specifically dialed in, do that. And then, yes, it's a diet. But intuitively, if you just eat by a certain group of rules, everything will fall into place. And I can teach people either way. It's just sometimes easier when, as adults, we don't have rules. That's really the problem. We can do whatever we want, eat whatever we want, bend the rules whenever we want. So that's what I try to do, is set some basic rules that are, you never go outside of this, but realistically, sometimes we might. But if I set them as sometimes, then they're going to be always.
100% agree with you. Yeah. I was thinking about that a lot. And that's exactly why, when somebody says, well, I thought you were, you know, cause it's just, look, Tortorich got this right. NSNG is just simple, right? I mean, it's easy to say, it's easy to understand. And so when you say NSNG, they're like, well, I thought you were no. And I'm like, come on. Like, a fat guy like me, if I tell myself no, I'm going to have it here or there. If I tell myself here or there, or sometimes, I'm going to have it a lot.
Yeah.
And once I get to a lot, all bets are off. Like, I'm going to be eating everything in sight. So I think that's a big deal. And I also think that it's not somewhere that you and I struggle. The struggle isn't what we can eat. For the most part, you know, we follow along with it.
Yeah.
So it's just when you hit plateaus. And I know that one of the, I don't know if I would call it, maybe even just say a specialty of what your groups do, Peter, has been, I've seen a lot of people kind of show up when they get to a plateau. I sent one of our listeners and a friend of mine to you because of that. Nancy. Maybe you could talk a little bit about why your system with plateaus is a good place to turn to.
Sure. And that's the thing, you know, plateaus don't need to happen. There's a lot of things that don't need to happen. You never have to go through keto flu if you get your electrolytes. You never have to hit a plateau if you don't overeat calories, energy calories, to be specific. And, you know, even though we think that fat has this magical property, and yeah, it's great for the hormones, we have to think, you know, from an endocrine standpoint, we need things that are going to keep our hormones healthy and get the signaling right, getting the leptin and ghrelin and talking the right way, getting glucagon, releasing fat cells, keeping insulin suppressed, keeping cortisol. So we got the hormone equation, but we do that from eating low carb and from having the right amount of fat. And your body needs per lean pound of body mass, like a 0.4 of a gram per lean pound of body mass to have healthy hormones. So for me, I'm like 185 lean. I need a minimum of like, you know, 90 grams of fat to be healthy. Anything above that is by choice to keep me feeling full and keep me feeling happy and really make the food taste better. Protein is the most satiating macronutrient that we can eat. And there's loads of new science out that, you know, I guess it takes a while for people to do tests, something like that. Nobody really cares, you know, but there are some tests out there that they've proven down that protein is the most satiating macronutrient. The reason why we want the fat is that it makes it more palatable. I mean, if you ever tried to sit down and eat like, you know, a pound of egg whites, it's near impossible. But a pound of bacon, it's kind of easy. You get the fat and
do that every morning.
When I break this down to its simplest component, we really only have two groups of macros. We have the macros that supply energy, and we have the macros that rebuild and repair. And that's what protein is. Its only job is to, you know, it's sixth grade science. It's amino acids are the building blocks of every cell in the body. So I have people that are like, well, I don't work out, so I don't need extra. It's like, you know, it's not just about muscle building. It's about getting the right amount of protein to keep your cells regenerating. We have an amino pool in our body of about 300 grams. It's constantly replenishing. Old proteins are coming in. New proteins are going out. You know, they have to be complete. You know, the newer buzzwords like autophagy is happening, where we're killing off old cells that don't belong, mutated ones. Cells can also self-destruct. But overall, that protein pool, amino acid pool that you have, is there. So there's no magic window for protein. As long as you're getting your protein a couple times a day, that's more than enough to give your body what it needs to get to the muscles. And if you eat the protein and you don't use it, your body pees it out. That's really the ultimate end result for protein. It, you know, it's just ammonia or converts over and drops out. As far as fat, the body's not stupid. It's not going to take something, go through the whole digestion process, and then say, okay, well, I might as well just get rid of it because he's not going to use it. He has enough today. Now, that can happen. If you ate 12 tablespoons of coconut oil, you'll see exactly how fast your body can get rid of excess fat. And that does happen. You know, when people overeat fat, they're not digesting at all. You don't have enough bile to be able to process half the fat that some people are taking in excess. Ultimately the body, if it doesn't use it for energy, it's going to want to store it for later because it went through all the work. It's not stupid. You know, it knows you'll use it later. So it's going to do that. Same thing with carbohydrates. If the body is either going to use it for energy or it's going to store it for future energy. So what I found out is that when we eat on that side, then there's an easy experiment that you can do. It's called a protein sparing modified fast. You basically take in almost 2 grams of protein for lean pound of body mass, and you do that for a week, and you drop your fat down to 30 and you drop your carbs down to 30. And guess what? You'll lose like 6 or 7 pounds in a week, and you'll lose loads of body fat. I dropped like 2% body fat off within a week of doing that, 5 days actually. And it proved that protein does not make you fat. You know, it's terrible to have to eat that much protein, but and ultimately I think that there's studies that show you can eat up to, in a fasted state, up to 3 or 4 grams of fat and not damage the system at all. But I try to teach people based on, you know, there's two really smart guys out there, Finney and Volek, which, you know, these are the scientists that really set the bar on all the studies and what we need to know. And when people read his book, they read that they said you should moderate your protein. When what they said is you should moderate your protein to 0.6 to 1 gram per lean pound of body mass based on what you're doing. You know, so people stopped at the first page, never made it to the second page, and realized that, you know, having 1 gram of protein per lean pound of body mass is not high protein. You know, that's right protein. It's quality protein.
So I've reread and reread now a couple of times the Obesity Code.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really trying to understand, and you touched on this, so I wanted to kind of rewind and have you explain this a little bit. In that book, why am I blanking on the name? Jason Fung, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Talks about how it's insulin and hormones, right, that are really making us fat. That the insulin hormone is, he can utilize that to make people fatter or skinnier.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, his studies, he's given people insulin and showed that, you know, if you have somebody with anorexia, you can give them insulin and they will gain weight. You know, but it doesn't happen without them eating food. You know, there's a component, you know, for anything. If you want to build muscle, you got to give it three things. You got to give it growth hormone, you got to give it some sort of substrate, and you got to put a stress on it. So that's, you know, men, we have testosterone, women have their hormones, that all comes into play. We put stress on the muscle by lifting, we feed it protein, we grow. We don't feed it protein and do all those things, it's not going to grow. In the same way, we have the hormones, insulin, and, you know, with the secondary cortisol, there's like 140 different hormones that are all involved with gaining weight. But, you know, those are the two key drivers, and you take those. And, you know, of course, we know, like, cortisol, because if you've ever taken prednisone, that's synthetic cortisol, you'll gain weight. But you don't do it without eating extra. You know, if you ate 1,000 calories and your body demanded 1,500, regardless of whatever situation you have, you would lose weight. And everybody's afraid of, like, eating too low, that they're going to put themselves at this metabolic dysfunction. And it's not that fragile as we might think. I heard one thing in one of your last podcasts about, you know, it is nice to eat a lot of calories and keep your body at that higher level, that you eat more to burn more type levels of calories. But that's something that we need to understand, that, you know, not everybody works out with certain intensity levels. So it's a dangerous dance to try to, you know, eat and fuel and diet and lose weight and have that all balance out with the workouts. But sorry, I went in a full loop, but back to Dr. Jason Fung. I mean, I like his work. I like reading his stuff, but you also have to understand that he deals with, you know, morbidly obese patients most of the time. You know, so he's dealing with a completely different, you know, subset of people that, you know, he doesn't have to worry about them losing muscle. You know, where he says that, you know, through his studies that, you know, there's an anabolic component when you fast, that you'll put on whatever muscle loss happens within the first, you know, 36 hours of fasting. The science says completely different. Now, he doesn't see it in his patients because they're morbidly obese. They don't have a whole lot of muscle to begin with. And the bigger elephant in the room is they're going to die from their fat. They got to get rid of that first. So he's not looking about future metabolic needs. You know, with me being from the athlete side, I got to worry that, you know, if you fast, you're going to lose like 3/4 of a pound of muscle within the first, you know, first 48 hours. And it takes, as a man in your, if you're a man and you're in your first year of lifting, the most you can add muscle-wise is 2 pounds a month. And then it halves itself each year. You know, so we don't want to do anything to jeopardize that. But
Well, I'm not sure that fasting is really his point. I mean, I think that's a very, very small piece of what he talks about. He's really talking about the role that insulin plays and how insulin resistance is a key component for guys like me. I mean,
yeah,
that's...
Sorry, I went sideways a little bit on you there.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I don't want to concentrate on multi-day fasting because I don't think that that's a... I think we can all agree that that's not the healthiest practice in the world. But the, you know, intermittent fasting, you know, where we eat within a smaller window, which I think you advocate, right? Like a 16-8 window when you can.
But I've come to learn that it's not about, like, I used to think that what we needed to do was have times when our insulin was up and then have times when we're not eating and our insulin is down. And what I've really come to learn in the newer science from some of the, you know, smarter guys out there that I've been following, they say, you know, that it's still not true. This is still a calories in, calorie out equation. The only thing that the way that we eat what that does is it takes the edge off. It makes it, eating the fat makes the hormones more controlled so that we're not hungry all the time. It makes it easier to comply with the diet. But at the end of the day, it's still an energy equation. We have to understand that if we're overeating energy, and that would be fat or carbs, that's going to store. And if we're, regardless of, I love the stories where, it's like getting somebody bringing a pizza to your door and then you take one bite out of one slice and you put the pizza off to the side and then you're still hungry. So you continue to do that again and again. But, as Jason Fung speaks about that, it's hormonal partitioning, that your body decides to partition more of it to storage than energy. So you're left feeling hungry and without energy and lethargic while you just store. But the main component of that is overeating food.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that anyone argues that in the end it's about overeating. But I think that where I find his work in particular interesting is the fact that you've got this insulin resistance, and therefore you may overeat a little bit, and then it becomes a vicious cycle. And then you're kind of chasing it, right? And I can speak to that because I can tell you when I shifted how I ate, after the 4 days of headache, which, I get the electrolyte imbalance. And if I would have found you first, I might have avoided some of this. But after that, I mean, everything's been pretty darn good overall. And I can tell you for me, one of the interesting parts is I suffered from migraines for over 30 years and I don't have them anymore. I haven't had one since I did this.
Is your magnesium up now? Are you managing your magnesium? Right?
I don't do anything but eat and take a multivitamin.
Oh, right.
I take that back. I take a line too, or one of these probiotics.
Yeah.
But other than that, I don't track any of this stuff, but I think naturally we've just started to eat more green leafy greens, we're eating more nutrient dense foods and cooking at home. Well, we didn't tonight, but for the most part, we cook at home a lot more, which I think then gives us control over, what we're eating. And it's an interesting thing because I'm not sure I buy, I mean, in the end, it has to be calories in, calories out, because your body's got to, I mean, that's part of the equation, but how we get to that equation, I think is, in my head, at least, because I've read just a ton over the last couple of years, it's N equals one. I mean, we're all individual. So, how do you balance that? We each probably have a little bit different something going on our insides versus, just an overall protocol. Has it worked? Like, has your protocol worked for every single person that's gone through it?
Well, that's part of the reason for the coaching, is finding out the nuances. But, I preach constantly to everybody, do the N equals one experiments, try something out. If it doesn't work for, 2 weeks, then either put it in, remove it. But at the end of the day, it really creates bad science, because what happens is people then say, I did this, so this is what works, so that is the new science. And it's just such a bad, study of one person doesn't make real science. And we got to be careful there. I've done things that have worked, and meanwhile, it was because of something else I was doing that really, created the good part happening. Not to be so vague, but back to what you were saying with Jason Fung, so the insulin component. So yes, I preach that this is it's an energy equation wrapped with an endocrine issue, which is hormonal balance, and depends on quality of macros and where the macros are coming from, so whether they're coming more from energy or coming more from rebuild. So we have to, it's a three-legged chair. We have to balance all those. It's not just energy equation, energy in, energy out. It's not just eating for hormones, because people do that all the time. They stuff them down all the fat so that they have healthy hormones, and then they don't lose weight. And then lastly, it's about balancing the macros out right. It's making sure that you're eating for the job you're doing. If you're running, you will need a little bit more carbohydrates. Somebody that's putting in 100-mile months, I would probably say you're still good in the 50-60 range. But you might even want to be up closer to 80 if they're timed right. You definitely need more protein, and you need to protect that because you got to repair those muscles that you're breaking down in every day in that training. So when I take somebody on as a coaching client, we'll sit for an hour and a half, that's the first part, and just break down everything that they've been doing, you know, what type of issues that they have. If, you know, if I see that they just put on a lot of weight recently, if it depends on stress at work. And realistically, if somebody's sleep isn't right, it's funny, I made a joke in the beginning that if somebody's sleep isn't right, I can't even work with them. They got to get their sleep right first, because if that's not right, their cortisol is completely out of whack, and they're going to be a more difficult person to get to lose weight.
So you can't work with Pete, basically. His sleep is horrible.
We just talked about this, though, right? I mean, because we just talked about cortisol being, in stressors at work, stress. You produce more cortisol if you don't sleep. And I've had trouble sleeping my entire life. I had a pretty good run for a little while, but now I'm back to having some problems sleeping, and it's not healthy. I mean, I've actually stopped trying to lose weight right now just because of what you were just talking about, right, Peter? It's a tough balance to lose weight while you're training for big events. And
you have to pick your priorities.
Yeah.
And I have people that come in and they're looking, they're like, well, I want to do this race, but then I also want to lose weight, but then I also want to gain muscle and get ripped. It's like, you can't do those all. You got to pick whichever one's the most important. And I mean, for most of the clients, I remove exercise for the first 2 to 3 weeks. We got to get the big blocks in place. If your diet is not set right to help you lose weight, then it's not set right, period. You know, layering other things on top of it. It's like having a headache and giving it aspirin. You know, we don't figure out why you're having the headache. We need to figure that out first. So if we get the big blocks set first and have what you eat directly affect your weight, then we can decide, okay, let's layer on some work that's more in that maximum aerobic function range, that MAF range, which is 180 less your age. So that this way we're incorporating more fat burning without the expense of glycogen. Because if you do it that other way, you're going to be hungrier. And then we layer that on top. And then at a point that we want to kick it up a notch, do more 80-20 work where you're doing some speed work, then we have to look at the calories you're burning and maybe add back a quarter, maybe a half of what you're using. And that's where it gets difficult. That's like trying to fuel a car while it's going 200 miles around the racetrack. It's a little bit difficult.
So I want to just define for people out there that when you say MAF range, you're talking about heart rate. You're talking about 180 minus your age for the heart rate, and not to go above that, which keeps you in, we're trying to stay in zone two that they talk about for long periods of time, or longer periods of time when possible. So, I mean, Gretchen, you heard, I mean, if you work with Peter, 2 to 3 weeks of no exercise, I don't know how you would handle that.
Oh, it'd be hard on me. I don't
know if I
can handle that.
You're already halfway there. This is great.
So you're the perfect client because, you know.
I sleep very well. I have no problem not exercising. I have a natural low heart rate. I mean, so, you know. That's not an issue because I don't do anything. So it really stays pretty low.
I'm not sure he's preaching that you shouldn't do anything
either. Oh, sorry.
Not long term.
You know, okay, got it.
No, this is halfway there. We got this. Yeah, but it's funny. You know, probably the worst ways to lose weight is adding in some cardio because that's going to make you hungry. I mean, cardiovascular work you do for the heart, you do for your vascular system.
He's
my new
best friend.
But he's talking about which goal, though, here. I mean, if you listen to the whole thing, maybe, but you can selectively hear this. That's cool.
I was able to body sculpt without any cardio. Like, I got abs by not doing cardio. I got it from lifting, and I got it from eating properly. And it didn't take starving. I was always comfortable, but you know, not too comfortable. And that's the thing we got to look at, that it's nice to have what you want. It's nice to feel, you know, that you're able to eat the foods that, you know, make you feel good within this way of living. But it's comfortable that got us into the problems in the first place. We got to just have that little bit of edge on what we're doing so that we're not always full. You know, we maybe have a little bit of hunger here and there.
Gretchen, did you want to start lifting?
I used to in college.
Well,
I mean, I was on the
crew
team.
Crew team.
Yeah. I mean, I got mad. I remember when after my freshman year, after 1 year on the crew team, I came home. My father looked at me, thought I was a football player. He's like, did you start playing with the football team? I'm like, what the? Like, my back muscles just grew extremely. I mean, it was just like, I was like, damn. And I feel like I never, the width never went down. It just got replaced with fat. It's now it's not muscle anymore. Now I just kind of converted that stuff to. I always feel now like I have like these huge broad shoulders. I always feel like I do. It's like a very, it's like I'm very self-conscious about that.
So it's kind of interesting too to listen, like taking what you said last time, kind of hearing, you know, what Peter's saying, like, would you ever consider doing a consult with somebody like him?
Yeah. Yeah. I would. Sure. I would.
I think that's kind of interesting because I didn't know like what your answer would be because normally when I suggest things, I mean, and I'm not even suggesting that. I was just wondering like where you were like open to that kind of stuff.
I feel like it might give you a little too much satisfaction if I did. So maybe I should change my answer to no.
No, you know what? You know what? Here's what would happen. I'll tell you.
Would it help with the epic hike? Is this,
it would help with the epic hike, I'm sure, because, you know, hopefully he would help you get to a point where you'd want to move a little bit. But here's what would happen. Here's my prediction, right? So you would start working with Peter, like go on a consult, kind of do a little bit of coaching, right? And then you'd have like this unbelievable weight loss and like, I would still be stuck because I'm not sleeping while I'm running, so I'm hungry, right? I'm tweaking everything, trying to fit it all in, and then you would like shrink, and then finally realize that you married well below your station.
And trade you in.
So I guess what I'm saying is I don't think Peter causes divorce, but it's a possibility. That's all I'm saying.
That really went far. Huh?
That took a way left turn.
I wouldn't use that as a promo. Or maybe if you're trying to get women, that could be a good promo.
It's funny. You're actually taking me like to towards the end of this. What I was going to offer both of you is I want to offer you both in an initial consult. So when you guys are ready, I'll get on the phone with you for an hour and a half, teach you how this is done. In the same way that you're doing whatever you're doing for training, you're not going to kill yourself for 6 weeks of trying something different. And that's really what it's all about.
But would I kill others? I may not kill myself, but what are the risks to my husband and daughter? I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, the risk is dropping some fat and, you know, getting more protein in, so gaining some muscle. That's basically what happens. And overall,
crunch and smash.
it's about drop. You know,
I could use some more muscles. Our daughter's getting very heavy. She's 31 pounds now, man.
the thing more for you, Pete, is how do we reduce the stress? So right now, your body doesn't know the difference of a lion chasing you up a tree or deadlines at work or stress at the job or the stress that you're putting on yourself just from running or now the additional stresses, which you're doing a little bit more carbs, which is actually better, but the stress of trying to run low carb without replenishing, which that whole gluconeogenesis thing causes a lot of cortisol release. So, you know, your stress is so high that where it might seem that one thing over here is what's causing your sleep to be an issue, it could be just increasing your protein up and making sure your carbs are at the right level for your workout. And, you know, separate from here, I'll talk to you, but you should really check out like HRV training, get one of those heart monitors.
And I've got a heart monitor.
HRV
is checking your heart rate variability, and it tells whether you're really sympathetic or parasympathetic. It basically tells if you're stressed, your heart is stressed.
Yeah, my watch has all that stuff.
A stress score and all that?
Yeah.
Not a stress score. Oh. HRV is the distance of intervals between the heartbeats. And when your heart is really healthy, it can have a lot of variability. So let's say you have 60 beats a minute, your heart doesn't beat 1 second, 1 second, 1 second. It does 1.02, 0.96, 1.08. That variability is a very healthy heart. And if the vagus nerve is stressed, its only way to deal with the stress is to be very uniform. So it would want to be 1 second, 1 second, 1 second. And we can pick that up with a very, it's a polar monitor that Bluetooths to your telephone. But you use an app like Elite HRV or Sweetbeat, and it will tell how stressed you are. Now, if I would have paid attention to that app, this is an app that I was supposed to be using when I was running to say, should I be running hard the next day or easy the next day? And for me, it was always stressed. And I was like, well, I'm just running a lot, and that's probably why it's stressed. And if I would have listened to it, I would have realized that, no, I'm stressed. I'm overstressed, and I'm hurting myself. So there's ways to tell.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the plan I'm on is mostly easy miles. I mean, a lot. I mean, when I say easy miles, I'm talking, you know, 13 and a half to 14 minute miles, whereas, you know, I can run much faster, you know, but I'm not, and I am slowing down. I think that that's a definite key component, right? To make sure that you're not taxing the body too much. And, you know, I mean, this last weekend was the first time I've done that, like where I really stressed it. I mean, running 12 miles at marathon pace and then the next day coming back and racing, that I could feel it.
Yeah.
Like I could feel the stress on that. And I could tell by my, how hungry I did get. And you know, I want to do this. I mean, I'm definitely going to take you up on this because I would love to understand a little bit more. I mean, it's going to stress me out to track things. So that's going to, I don't know where that fits in. I don't know if that is like much stress as a lion going up a tree, but.
There's no need to track things. You know, the way that I break it down, I mean, as simple as it could be, if you're eating, if you're getting your fat from either eggs or meat, and that's the only way that you're getting your fat, and then you're eating something that grows above ground that is, you know, leafy or cruciferous, just we avoid the starchy tubers that are growing in the ground, and then you only use the bare minimum of oil or butter that you need to prepare the food. And if you still got fat on your body that you're looking to lose, you don't add extra oils, butter, nuts, cheese to the mix. And if you do that, that's kind of how this works, but it's still 50% of your calories, are more than 50% of your calories are coming from fat. It's still a high fat diet. It's just, you know, for somebody like you, your body is probably looking to burn about 140 grams of fat, 150 grams of fat. So we want to feed it 100 grams and force it to go to the body for the rest. And that's the key. And you're still going to feel full. Like your body should know the difference of you ordering a pizza to your front door, or getting one out of the freezer. So in the same way, shouldn't know you eating it through your mouth or taking it from the sides of your belly. You know, and that's what we have to train it for. That's the fat adaptation part. Because if those pathways don't get better, you're going to do this and you're going to be hungry. You know, it's bettering those pathways, which is a constant, never-ending process. But, you know, that takes, you know, it takes some work. It takes some running in zone two. It takes, you know, some eating the right way. It takes, you know, I don't like to call it intermittent fasting. I call it more compressed window because I just like the rules of keeping your food compressed down. Like for me, it's 11 to 6 is really where I eat. I'll still have, you know, coffee with a little bit of, you know, half and half in the morning. But I, you know, would try to push most of my meals between that 11 to 6 range. You know, so yeah, we could do this without tracking, but again, if you're going for a very specific goal, you know, sometimes you got to keep score of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, right now I eat this, you know, the way that you just described, except I do eat cheese because, you know, it tastes good.
Agreed.
Yeah. So I do eat, you know, we do eat cheese, but other than that, I mean, we basically eat the way that you described, but I have noticed myself taking in, you know, a potato here and there when I'm going to be running longer. Nothing, I don't think anything super overt, but I also am not concentrating on the weight loss component while I try to get through my, you know, my goal race at the end of April. And to me, I kind of subscribe to like what you're saying. Like I can't do it all. I've already lost 35 plus pounds, which has made me faster without any training, just because the less weight, you know, you get faster per mile. And then you couple that with the training, and I've been able to maintain, but I'm maintaining within this 3 pound window, you know, up and down within that same 3 pounds. So I feel like I've kind of got it under control, which is a huge piece for, you know, a big dude. I mean, you were a big dude. So, I mean, you get that, right? The mental breakthrough to maintain weight to me is even tougher than losing weight. Losing weight's hard, but in the end, it's maintaining weight that's really, really tough.
And in the same way, so when everybody starts this diet, when I started high fat. I was lucky that I was working out a lot. I did the high fat, low protein, and I lost weight because, you know, it, simply put, throw a 60-pound bag on your back and you're going to be working twice as hard to walk that around, and you're going to be burning a lot of calories. But as I started to drop off that weight, you know, every pound of fat burns about 2 calories. It's a living organism. It takes calories to burn. Every pound of muscle is about 6. So when you lose that much weight, you're losing a mixture of both. You probably lost your ability to burn about 200 calories, you know. So then now you're trying to eat at the same level and you're wondering why you stall out and it just doesn't work. So then you have to work out harder, or you eat more, and you get into that cyclical
one-upping and one-stepping.
Well, that's probably where you're at.
Yeah.
I mean,
I've said that myself. I said, I think I'm going to have to actually start moving.
Well, and tweak what you're eating, right?
Right.
I mean, you naturally figured out that you need to tweak.
Yes.
And now, you know, maybe talking with Peter and giving that a go could help. I mean, yeah. I'm also leaving for Spain here in less than a week.
Yeah.
Where we're going to
talk about stress.
eat and drink our way through, you know, Spain, you know, with 16-hour days. For work, you know, and I'm in the wine business. So, you know, it's going to be a tough one, but I'm going to do the best I can without offending people.
Right.
Because I don't know how you explain this in Spanish. I'm not very good at explaining it in English.
Get your translator out.
It's making the best decisions for whatever you're up against.
Yeah,
you know, exactly.
This is real world and we're adults and we're going to have situations. I've been tempted. I want to make a book that's filled with 15 golden tickets. And it has to be that tangible that when you want to pull one of those out, you have this big 1-pound golden ticket that you have to put on the table and say, I'm eating something bad today. You know, and that's kind
I'm going all in.
But you pick where the days are. And, you know, I'm in a business of entertaining constantly, so I'm always out for another dinner, another drink, another something. So, there's always something around the corner, and if we rely on that going away, it's never going to go away. We just have to manage it the best way that we can, you know, at those times.
All right. So, you in your bio, you know, that we read that you're a musician. Are you still a musician? What's going on with that?
No, you know what? I kind of hung it up. I was, you know, I was dating a girl, and you know, being a musician and having drunk chicks jump on stage doesn't really.
It's not good for relationships.
Yeah, not conducive for a good relationship there. You know, but you know, I decided, you know, hung that up a little bit, and also, I mean, from a diet standpoint, you know, everybody's buying you shots, and you're drinking a lot, you're spending crazy late hours, your sleep's interrupted, and you know, I'm sure you can manage it in multiple other ways, but I realized that just was a part of the lifestyle I had to put aside. Now, I'm anxious to get back. I broke up with the girl, so we're...
There you go. So
now you need to find women that jump on stage.
So now I need to hedge my bets and get a guitar in front of me so I look cooler.
What kind of music do you play?
I was basically billed as a drunken bar act. So I did 400 songs. People would text up whatever they wanted to hear. If you asked for Freebird, I would throw a rubber chicken at you. I'd pull people up on stage to, you know, scream Bon Jovi songs into the mic.
And that's perfect. You know,
it was like Key West style music.
Gretchen heard Bon Jovi, so she's in.
I'm in.
Now I also talk to you for sure.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I'll be happy to do so. And I tell you, it's not... People get afraid because I seem as if I have so many rules and so many parameters. But, you know, when I'm asked what's the proper way that this happens, I quote textbook. But then once we actually sit down with the person, then we have to, you know, if somebody wanted to keep their wine in, you could do that. You know, we just have to figure other things that go out. We will just put a flag in there. And if the scales don't move in 2 or 3 weeks with us leaving that there, we go back to the flags and then we just systematically remove one, remove the next. You know, if you don't want to track, we don't track. But if systematically, once we make those changes, it doesn't go, that's a red flag. We got to say, okay, well, we tried it that way. So now maybe let's just build a bunch of things on MyFitnessPal. Like I've done in the back of the book, I've done it for you. There's what 4 ounces of chicken is, you know, what 4 ounces of steak is, what 4 ounces of a burger is. And, you know, for me, whenever I'm weighing my food, you know, I had to do this up front so that I'd have some, some idea of size. But 4 fingers on my hand is the size of about 4 ounces of protein. So now I know whenever I'm eating, I usually have a full hand size of protein. That's 8 ounces. That gives me enough protein in a meal. If I want a snack of almonds, twice my finger length is 50 calories of almonds. You know, so it's to put things in perspective, because if you've ever tried to measure a tablespoon of peanut butter, I guarantee you've gotten it quite wrong.
Yeah, been there.
There's no doubt. I mean, I think it's interesting too that alcohol often does become like a devil thing, right? And mm-hmm. and it may be for all I know. But I was just listening to So This Is Fitness, and Coach Daryl and his wife Megan was on that episode, and she talked about we're going to do a cross podcast, like we're going to talk to each other and mm-hmm. both put it in our feeds. And she was talking about how, okay, she's not drinking right now. You know, like she's kind of let the beer go. They're beer drinkers. And I think she actually drinks wine too. So, you know, it's interesting though, because I do think that you've got to look at every component of life and, like you're saying, kind of take things out, put things in, readjust them and kind of find where your groove is, which is great. So
yeah, we have to do things that, you know, comply with the diet. There's no doubt about that. You just can't do whatever you want and get away with it. But we also have to have things that keep us compliant. So there's those couple things we want to keep in, and you know, we got to make those decisions. If it's something like, I have somebody that doesn't want to stop drinking, you know, medium chain triglycerides in their coffee, which is really the worst thing you could do, you know, by trying to lose weight, by drinking a very fast acting, quick energy fat that just makes ketones immediately. It trains the body to be very lazy. You know, so it's things like that that I fight people on removing them. But 2 or 3 weeks later, they come back and they say, okay, well, I did it now and the scale's moving. It's like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, like,
do you taunt them then and be like, "Ha ha, I told you."
Little bit, yeah.
That's great for business. There are times though that you do have non-negotiables. I mean, I'm in the wine business. It's not like I can give up wine, right? So,
sure.
And if we want to stay married, we have to drink wine.
Yeah, well, especially you.
Yes.
Need to be able to drink a little bit of wine, but I think it's great. So let's. We've been going for about an hour, so I got to. We'll try to wrap it up here. If you had, you know, a couple of things that people should do right now, like, do you have a couple of things that people should start to dip their toe towards getting their life on track?
Oh yeah, you know what? It really comes back to the simplicity of NSNG and the roots from there. It's just remove the sugars, remove the grains. We're not supposed to be eating grains. We're not made for it, and definitely stop the processed stuff. That would be like my number one on the list. If you do nothing more, just, you know, minimize those all down the best that you can. I would have to say number two is stop the fake stuff. I mean, people take these different, you know, fake sugar this or a low net effective carb this or whatever it is, and they're not realizing that, you know, in the hierarchy of the way that we burn fuels, we got to burn off alcohol and alcohol sugar alcohols before, and exogenous ketones, which are just terrible. We got to burn those off before we get down to a little bit of protein in our blood and, you know, the carbs that we ate and then the fat that we ate before we can finally get to body fat. So, you know, everybody that's like I was doing it, I was drinking Monster energy drinks and I was getting a blood sugar rise, you know, out of the no carb, no sugar ones. And it's because the sweeteners in there have glycemic indexes to them. So we had to be accountable for that. There's no such thing as free calories.
Awesome.
That would probably be the two that I would hit first.
Yeah, I mean, and we kind of agree with that. So
yeah.
All right. So if people want to find you, where do they go? How do they find you online?
Yeah. So All Diets Fail. That's the best way to reach out and, you know, see what the book is, the video, see how the coaching works. But people like to talk to me first, so I can always be reached at the Fat Adapted Athlete Beginner Group. People join up there and they post things. Fat Adapted Athlete's a little bit higher brow, science minded, and for the 100-mile runners, the crazies of the group, that's a little scary for the beginners. Stick to the beginner place. And Instagram, the Fat Adapted Athlete, and that's where people really reach out and ask loads and loads of questions. And you know, once I can correct two or three things for free, they kind of don't mind hiring me. And, you know, I'll say, you know, I'm not looking to cheapen the product, but I figured out the most inexpensive way that I can do this and help as many people as I want. Because at the end of the day, I want to make this into a business, but I started this because I wanted to help people. I've been doing this for 3 years for free, helping thousands of people. And I realized that the more that I can spend time doing on this, the more people I can help. It's all about changing people's lives. You know, for me now, it's I don't want to sound like Mother Teresa, but it's truly what fuels me and what I'm doing now. You know, I can, you know, don't want to make it sound silly. We can make money. We all have jobs. you know, but, you know, doing something that's rewarding like this, it's, I mean, I got a lucky chance to do this. So I'm trying to spread it out to as many people as I possibly can.
That's fantastic. I mean, I lurk in both Fat Adapted Athlete Beginner and the Fat Adapted Athlete because I do like science and getting a little nerdy. So I'm there and I'm looking at it, and I could say that everybody, I mean, you ask a question, you're going to get answers.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to get a lot of answers. And frankly, you know, sometimes the answers don't jive. So, I mean, that's when it's great. You know, Peter will, you know, you'll often jump in and kind of give your two cents on it. And you've been super accessible to people there. So, I mean, that's great. And I mean, we get it. We do this podcast because we've helped at least three people.
Makes all the money we put into it worthwhile.
That's right. So yeah, but thank you so much for joining us and for your generous offer for us to talk to you for a consult. That would be fantastic. So we're definitely going to take you up on that going forward.
Yeah, wait until you get back from Spain, though.
Yeah, well, I'm going to wait till after my race, more than likely. Gretchen should start now.
I'm going to have to wait till after you're back from Spain as too, well, because right? This is not going to be, you know, stress-free.
No, it will not.
Maybe I'll just go to Spain with you.
There you go.
My own personal dietitian with you.
That's perfect.
Huh.
He says I can't eat it. I'm good.
But I'll have to use a Spanish translator for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. Well, thanks again for joining us. And I'm gonna just go ahead and close up the show. You've been listening to episode 29 of the Fat Man Chronicles. The music is Safar, You Got Me Wrong. You can find us on social media at Fat Man Stories, kind of all over the place. Fatmanchronicles.com. Please go to iTunes, I guess it's called Apple Podcasts now most of the time, and subscribe, or Google Play, Stitcher, Podbean, or any of your favorite apps. If you could leave a review, that would be fantastic. That's how people do get to find the show. And if you want some swag, go over to Zazzle. Zazzle.com/Fatman Chronicles. We're getting pictures from people buying some swag, and we love to see the Be Better Today movement going forward. And then finally, if you do want to support the show and help us offset some of the costs to make it, we definitely appreciate it. It is a labor of love, but all your help is appreciated. So our patrons, Linda and Christine and Julie, we really, really appreciate you. And if you want to do that, you can go to fatmanchronicles.com and click the donate button, or to Podbean and click on becoming a patron. So that's it. We're going to wrap it up now. And remember to get out there and be better today.
I was not hiding. I was unsure. And now